Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is our Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, September 26th, 2015. This is episode 1223. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with easy step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones, smartwatches, digital photography, home theater. Scott Wilkinson joins us in about half an hour and all that jazz. Anything with a chip in it, that's what we'll talk about. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's my phone number if you want to call me with a question or a comment or a suggestion. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. or Canada. Outside that area, Skype works, because you're calling a toll-free number. Shouldn't cost you anything if you use Skype out. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website, very important. Keep a track of this. TechGuyLabs.com. The reason I say that is that's the only thing you have to remember. Anything I talk about, any links I mention, any tips I give you, even the audio and video of the show and people's questions and my answers, they're all recorded for posterity, such as it is, at TechGuyLabs.com. Mostly it's for you, less for the posterity. I don't know, 100 years from now, if they'll be reading those websites. Free, open, easy, no sign-up. TechGuyLabs.com. Oh, my goodness. Apparently, I woke up Siri, and she's been writing down everything I've said. And they say Apple doesn't spy on you. I'm playing with it. Okay, I'm a little giddy. Take a deep breath. I'm playing with a new iPhone. Got it yesterday. People waited. A lot of people waiting in lines. Availability, I think, is I'll have to check. I think it's still okay. You could still go to an Apple store today. And if you're thinking about a new iPhone, yeah, this is the one. Even, and this is unusual, even if you're using an old, not-so-old iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, superficially, these look the same. They're the same, roughly the same dimensions, although now we have rose gold. And I'm pleased to say, and I apologize, Apple, for insinuating that it was pink, but you just didn't have the guts to call it pink. No, it's... because it's a metallic, it's kind of, it, depending on how the light hits it and the angle, it's anything from an actual gold to a coppery gold to a pink gold. If you look straight on, it's a little pinky. But it's only if you look straight on, and that's why I guess why it looks pink in the photographs. So just to reassure you, go to the store if you're thinking, I like this color, and I don't think it's unmanly at all. So there, here I am wearing my lumberjack shirt, just in case. but a couple of things they've really, really improved. The speed immediately hits you. Everything from the fingerprint reader, which is about twice as fast. Now, the fingerprint reader wasn't slow in the 6, but at this point, if you're unlocking the phone, it unlocks, boom, like that. No wait, no hesitation. Or very little, anyway. So I like that. The screen looks a little bit better. I'm not sure if it is, but it looks pretty crisp. Colors are very solid. Apple's always been good at that kind of thing. Camera's improved. I'm not yet going to say much improved, because I haven't really had a chance to play with it in a variety of situations. And I think, unlike years past, there's really some pretty stiff competition. The Galaxy S6 and the Note 5 from Samsung are amazing cameras. And I think depending on your taste more than your than anything else, your, just your personal taste, you might prefer them over the iPhone 6S. Maybe another good candidate in there, the LG G4, which has an excellent camera. But this camera is very fast. That's important. You know, no shutter lag. You tap the picture and it takes it right away. There's a new feature that's kind of interesting. They call live photos. And we'll see how well supported this is on the net. But it sure is impressive to show your family and friends. You could take a picture. What's what the camera's doing, and cameras have done this before, but of course it's Apple, right? So so now everybody knows about it. Nokia did it. HTC did it. The idea is it records, as soon as you lift the camera or turn it on, it's recording everything. And when you snap a picture, it saves in a buffer the second and a half before you took the picture and the second and a half after you took the picture, which means, and you could turn this off. It's on by default, but you could turn it off. But it means that in addition to a still picture, you're going to get a picture that has some motion in it and audio too. If you, and this is the other new feature, this new press hard on the screen feature. There's a tap, there's a peak, and then there's a pop. And a pop is if you press it really hard. And then I'm playing it back right now. And it turns it into a little 3-second snippet. So this, so what was a still picture comes alive with audio and video just for 3 seconds. It's not long, but and you have to press hard. And currently only iOS devices will see this, and maybe forever because it's unknown who's going to support this. Facebook says they'll build this into the iOS version of the Facebook app. But if you post it and the person looking at it is not looking on iOS, they'll just see a still. I imagine others might support it. I don't think it's too hard to support. And you can use, if you're, you know, as usual with Apple, as long as everybody you know is all Apple, they'll enjoy those pictures too, because you can send them via text messages and so forth. But again, it has to be to another iPhone. And I'm guessing it has to be another iPhone 6S, but I'm not sure. We'll have to check that out. All in all, the impressions, very positive for the new iPhone. Surprisingly so. You know, I kind of had given up on iOS a couple of years ago, moved over to Android. I felt it was more flexible, more open. Still is much more open. And in many respects, more flexible. But Apple has gradually improved iOS to the point where it's usable for me. I like it. So I'll carry this around for a while, which means I'll put on that silly Apple Watch again for a while. I'm still very, even with watchOS 2, which came out this week, the update to the watchOS. And I'm not alone in this. I've seen a number of articles, Farhad Manjoo writing in the New York Times, said it's a slight improvement. It's still not enough to make anybody really want the watch. There are those who do. I've heard from many people who get a lot of benefit out of Apple's watch, similarly to an exercise band or... So a lot of people use it for that, or just so they don't have to take their phone out of the pocket. I've talked to a nurse who said, you know, I really can't be on the phone, but the fact that I can see when I'm getting texts or messages at the nursing station without taking out the phone is really a boon. There are people like that who will be a real advantage too, but I think that's a small number. For most people, the Apple Watch does nothing except, and maybe this isn't a small thing, signal that you are one of the few, the proud, the Apple lover. I really feel like that's the, like, really, that's what's really going on. Because you see somebody else with an Apple Watch, you go, oh, hi. You like that? Me too. And I've done it. So I'm not blaming you. But I think really that's the main advantage of the Apple Watch. You're in the club. You could have, it could be the Apple beanie, the Apple necktie, the Apple pocket square. It's more about, and we're humans. This is human, the human animal. We want to belong, and we want to signal our belonging. We want to wear our 49ers jerseys. It's nice because then you see somebody else wearing it, and you have something to talk about. Yes, I have an Apple Watch. I know it's foolish, but it's my kind of tomfoolery. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. We can. I'll be glad to give you buying advice. Somebody asked in the chat room, should I abandon my Galaxy S6 for the new iPhone? No, I wouldn't. Unless you see something that's highly compelling. I think, you know, I have an S6 and a Note 5, and they're great phones. If you're having trouble with them, they don't do what you want, iPhone S6S is a fabulous choice. Look, this is the here's the truth. We have lots of choice now, and a lot of very good choices. When Apple first came out with the iPhone in 2007, that was it. Now there's choices in every price range, and these phones are awfully expensive. I think a good reason not to get a Galaxy or an iPhone is to save money. The Moto X, the OnePlus 2, there are lots of good choices. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I prefer the Note 5 strongly, because, and I believe it's because it has 4 gigs of RAM. There's still a lot of hesitation on the S6, and if you haven't and you don't notice that, then I wouldn't worry about it. But if you do, then I would look at the Note 5, because with 4 gigs of RAM, it's silky. And I think that may be, I'm not going to tell anybody, my wife's so excited about how fast the iPhone is. It may not be the processor. You know, they're claiming the A9 is 1.8 times faster. Apple, I don't know where Apple gets these numbers. And the GPU is, whatever they said, three times faster. They doubled the RAM. It's 2 gigs of RAM. And that may be really why it's faster. Apple, you know, battery life, I'm going to be watching very closely. I can't judge what I had in the last day because I had a weird SIM in it. Oh, and that's an insider tip. Some people were Google Fi curious. Can't put Google Fi in here. It identifies as T-Mobile, but boy, the signal was, which is why I don't think the battery life might have been affected. It was going up and down and up and down. I put a regular real T-Mobile SIM in here now, and everything seems much better. It was getting kind of flaky with the Google Fi. Of course, you're not supposed to. I think for form factors, somebody said, the Nexus 6 for $349, that's great. I'm back in the Blue Crew, Gary. It's the thunder down under. Were you there?
My friend sent it to me.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, little AC/DC, because I wonder if there's a psychological thing when you have a pink phone. They have to do things like wear lumberjack shirts and go to AC/DC concerts just to prove that you're a macho dude. It was fun. I went to see AC/DC last night. My wife's the big fan. I just tagged along. Gosh, they certainly rock for gentlemen in their late, what is it, 60s, you think? I think so.
Must be.
Oh, my gosh. They just, lots of energy. Lots of energy. Phone number 8888-ASK-LEO. That's Heather Hammond, the phone ranger. She'll be taking your calls today. And I see you filled the board already. Who should I talk to first?
Says Angus is 60, by the way.
Oh, is that all? Are you kidding? Is that all? I'm 58. He's
according
like,
to the internet.
I could do what he's doing. I could run around in short pants for three hours and playing guitar really, really fast. No, I couldn't. 60, is that all? Let's try it with Siri. You know, Siri responds now without me pressing a button.
Yeah.
Hey, Siri, how old is Angus?
Checking.
I
found some information about Angus.
Take a look. Let's see. There are 4,052 people alive today in the United States named Angus.
Add young.
The most common age for an Angus of any kind is 62 years. And then it showed me the current age distribution for Angus. I should have said Angus Young, huh? Hey, Siri. I'll give it one more. How old is Angus Young?
Angus Young is 60.
Hey, you're right.
Okay, but Brian Johnson's 67. Okay, well, and they're all short. Wow. These are their heights, too. Sorry, I got carried away.
Hey, Siri. How tall is he?
I'm on it.
You know, Heather's faster.
Heather's much faster.
I saw something on the web about how tall is Angus Young. Check it out.
But that's important. What just happened there, and maybe you didn't notice, is I didn't say how tall is Angus Young. I said, how tall is he? And Siri remembered your previous. It's getting context. Now, I understand. These are baby steps. But they're getting better and better. I think, actually, Google's even better. Google does an amazing job of this. And so I think we're getting closer and closer to the time. It will be in the next 10 years, I believe, when you'll be kind of commonly having conversations with household artifacts.
Mm-hmm. Google, you get me.
You get me. You really get me. So you have, as I said, a full board. Who should I talk to?
Well, Evan just got himself a new iPhone. He's Evan. In Phoenix and wants to ask you a question.
Hello, Evan. Leo Laporte,
Leo,
the tech guy.
From New Year's Eve. Actually.
Yes. I don't remember anything, Evan.
At the pictures will never leave my phone.
What can I... I wasn't there. I wasn't there. What can I do? Hi, Evan. What can I do for you?
Well, I went out. Actually, I was in Chicago at the time when they put them on sale. So I got up at 2 in the morning.
You waited in line.
I grabbed any phone that I could online.
You did it on the online. Like as I did, which is I ordered it midnight right away.
Right, and I was happy to get it. Got the one that I wanted at the time.
That's how Apple does it. And I'm happy to spend $1,000. Happy.
And then I was happy to wait in line for 20 minutes when I got to the store, even though I had an 11:30 appointment.
Oh. It's what we do. It's what we do.
Yeah, I wish my wife understood that. But
just tell her, honey, I could be worse. I could be going to AC/DC concerts.
Yeah. So anyway, here's my dilemma. Somebody we know mutually who's an authority on everything from Apple said that there's a difference between the AT&T version and the T-Mobile version.
That is true. Apple would love to sell one iPhone worldwide, but there are different radio frequencies, and they haven't yet. There's, I think, 24 LTE frequencies in the iPhone, but they haven't yet been able to put enough so that they can make one version. And that's what it's about, is what radio band. So the AT&T has an additional band that's specifically for AT&T.
All right, because I've had it with AT&T, and I really...
So you bought the AT&T iPhone, in other words.
Right.
Yes. So there's no harm in that. You have more bands than you will use elsewhere.
That's just that, from what I understand, it's the lower frequency, the one that's going to...
700 hertz, yeah.
It'll make it through...
Or megahertz, I'm sorry. Is it? No, it's 700 hertz. It is hertz. It goes through walls.
Right, and that's kind of important, even if it will do Wi-Fi calling, because there are places where...
I don't know if that matters. That's really an interesting question, though. Would the... That one unique frequency that AT&T has, the 700 hertz frequency, would that make a difference inside, especially thicker walls? And of course, as you know, the lower the frequency, the better it transmits through walls. That's why you don't have to worry about your microwave zapping you. It's such a high frequency, it can't get through the metal sides of the box. But I have never heard anyone address this. That's a really good question, Evan.
Well, maybe what I could do is actually take it to T-Mobile, try it out, order the T-Mobile version of it.
Go in a basement and see. I have, the truth is nowadays, and I don't think it's really an issue. Remember the days of Antenna Gate, the iPhone 4, and everybody was complaining Steve Jobs had to fly back from his Hawaiian vacation to explain that you're holding it wrong and all that. They've really figured out how to do these phones. They've solved, I think, in many ways, the antenna issues by some very sophisticated engineering, antenna tuning, real-time antenna tuning and things. And of course, maybe it's because it's 700 megahertz, it is. I'm sorry. 700 hertz, you would hear it.
Okay.
You would hear it. I apologize. 700
maybe
megahertz.
That's the future.
Yeah, that's why you can hear it through walls. Hey, Evan, are you in there? I don't make calls much anymore, to be honest with you. Do you use the phone a lot?
Yeah, I not
and you
a lot,
use it inside?
tight.
I think you might be worrying about something that's kind of, as they say in the legal profession, de minimis.
Okay.
But I don't know. I mean, right. You know, there's plenty you can obsess about in the world of tech. And that may be a new one. That's a new one to me. Of course, there is this new band or this unique band to AT&T. And I guess in theory, it might do better going through walls. I love T-Mobile. I've been using T-Mobile. You know, it really also has something to do with your area and who the better carrier is in your area. Are they exactly equal? Who knows, right?
Right. I mean, I have my iPad, which is on T-Mobile, and there have only been two times in buildings, one of them in Petaluma, as a matter of fact, where it wouldn't make it through in my AT&T.
We have good T-Mobile here, so I just don't know. I'll find out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nice to talk to you, Evan. I still don't remember anything. Oh, here's some news from Pegasus. The band isn't deployed yet anywhere. So while that band will be nice, band 30, AT&T isn't servicing it anyway. 700 megahertz. Why was I thinking 700 hertz? That's... That's 700 hertz. What am I thinking? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time for our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How are your ears doing after AC/DC?
You know, I spent a misspent youth. And I not only did I not wear earplugs when I went to rock concerts in my youth, I would sit as close to the speakers as I could. And I'm paying the price now.
Yeah.
Kids.
Yeah.
Kids. There's a couple of things. Your ears and your knees. You don't know until they're gone.
Right.
But
how important they are.
Yes. But so I wore earplugs last night, but I was a little disappointed. In fact, I meant to ask you about this. Mm-hmm. I got two different kinds of headphones, they say, designed for musicians and for music.
Earplugs, you mean?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Earplugs designed to give you true fidelity. So the Yetimotics, which were not super expensive, but like $30. Mm-hmm. They say we reduce the sound noise pressure by, I don't know, a lot, 30 dB or something. But
25, 30 dB, probably, yeah.
Which is enough. I mean, if it's 110.
That's a lot.
It's 110 decibels. That will damage your ears if you listen for 2 hours. But at 80.
For 15 minutes at 110, yeah.
That's like a jet engine. And I'm sure that's what most rock concerts are. I didn't bring a decibel meter with you. I wish I'd borrowed yours.
Yeah.
But they're not high fidelity. Although, interestingly enough, if you hold the tips of them, they conduct better, and then they get better fidelity.
How odd.
I know. I'm sure my audiologist could explain that. But but I left them in because I've had enough near damage for a lifetime.
No. I agree with you.
What do you do?
I have a pair of custom molded earplugs. And those are significantly more expensive than $30. You go to an audiologist, they squirt goo into your ear and it hardens and then it comes out and you have a custom mold of your own ear canal. Then they send that off to one company or another. Yetimotic Research is one company that makes these.
And what do they do? They make some sort of channel. They have to make a channel through it.
Yes. They have a hole in the middle and it's a standard size hole and they make filters that you can put in these holes. And the filters reduce the frequency level by, I think, 9, 15, or 25 dB. You have your choice.
Okay.
And I have the 25 dB ones because I'm interested in, you know, cutting as much as possible in order to save the hearing that I have, which is really important. And I have to say that the custom molded ones do give you a better fidelity. It's not perfect. And the reason it's not perfect is what's called bone conduction. Right? So the low frequencies in particular, but high frequencies to some degree also, you know, vibrate your bones.
Right.
And no earplug is going to prevent that from getting to your ear.
Not that it's loud, but it's good. Well, it was like this.
For those about to rock, we salute you.
Yeah, it sounds like no high frequencies.
Yeah, it was muddy.
Yeah.
Then I took him out and I listened, you know, for a few seconds I would take him out if I wanted to hear a guitar solo or something. And, you know, it did hurt after, you know, it doesn't take long before it actually hurts your ears. So kids, turn your headphones down. The problem is you turn them up, then you deafen yourself a little bit, so you turn them up a little
then
more.
Then you turn them up more.
And you get DJ hearing, which is another, I have so many reasons why I can't hear very well. It's sad because I love music and I want to hear every note.
Yeah, of course, of course. Well, this problem you just mentioned about kids turning up the earbuds or headphones or whatever, and then they lose some hearing and they turn them up more, that is even worse of a problem for live sound engineers at these concerts, who very often listen without headphone, without earplugs, in order to, as you say, hear every note and hear exactly what it's supposed to be. But then they start losing some hearing, and so they start EQing to adjust right. for their own hearing loss.
Oh, that's why it's so piercing.
Yes.
It's very piercing. The sound yes. is like all in hot. That's because the sound engineer is deaf.
Right.
Great. Yes. Now exactly we're being right. deafened.
Right. You know what? The punishment is even worse.
It's yeah. fun to see a live group, and I went for the atmosphere in the live group, not for the fidelity. Besides, it was an open-air ballpark. I mean, there wasn't going to be great fidelity anyway. So,
well, no, but also there wasn't going to be a lot of reverb. So, you know, a lot of reflections off the walls and ceilings and stuff.
Well,
so
sometimes there can be really negative reverbs in those stadiums because it kind of bounces on the lower part. It just can
I
really,
suppose,
it
yeah.
can be really, because they turn it up.
Yes.
they overamplify. And then I'm watching the musicians. They all have, as all musicians these days do, and I wear them. You mentioned the custom molded earplugs. Yep. They also, of course, custom molded headphones, earphones.
In-ear monitors.
In-ear monitors, they call them. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, Ultimate Ears were the ones that everybody wore. The guy who makes Ultimate Ears left when they were acquired by Logitech. And he now, Jerry Harvey, he now has JH Audio. So I think, and they, just as you say, you go to an audiologist, they pour a wax or a rubber in your ears, and they make a mold. Mm-hmm. But these fit exactly into your ear because, I mean, no one else, the advantage is no one can wear them.
No one else can wear them.
It's like a fingerprint. But they
and
also seal nicely.
Better isolation, yes.
Yeah. So I imagine the musicians like them. Although I noticed all the musicians were wearing them except for the lead singer, Brian Johnson, who had one ear. But I think he wanted to hear he probably wanted to hear the band better or hear his voice or something.
Yep.
So I feel like, boy, those guys must, after a while, just not be able to hear a thing.
Oh, man. I can't imagine what people like the Rolling Stones or Kiss, you know, who've been doing this 30, 40 years, what their hearing profile must be.
Who knows what they heard to begin with?
Well, I have to tell you, at CES this year, I went and saw Kiss. Harman had a special concert.
No.
They did. And I was wearing my earplugs, of course. And I had my sound
rock and
meter with
roll
me.
All night. What was
and
the sound?
Song, it was at least 120 average.
So OSHA, somebody just said in the chat room, OSHA rules are that a 90 dB is the max for an 8-hour workday. So
that's not true. It's 85.
85, okay.
Yeah.
And 85 is loud, but
it's
not
loud. It's really loud.
Yeah. 120 is like a jet plane going off.
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
And Paul Stanley at the end of one song says, "Are you getting what you came for?" And everyone
what?
Goes, yeah.
Everybody says, "What?"
Everybody
goes,
"What?"
Hey, were you talking to us?
Those guys are over 60 years old.
Oh, well, you know what?
And
I
the
hate
Stones
to say
are
it.
Probably pushing 70.
Look at us.
Yeah.
That's the funniest thing going to an AC/DC concert. Lots of the younger people, but there are also lots of people in their 60s and 70s who grew up listening to them. And then you kind of brings home the fact that, yeah, well, we're getting on. We're getting on. But we can still rock, right?
We can.
My son's going, "No, you can't." No, Dad, you can't.
I can still rock.
90 seconds left. I'm sorry, I completely hijacked your segment. Anything you wanted to talk about?
Well, we've been talking about in the chat room about two subwoofers, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before. It's much better to have two subwoofers than one because you can position them so things are the bass response is very smooth in your room. But you need to have either two subwoofer outputs, and this was the question in the chat room: does the Onkyo TX-NR646 have two? And it looks like it does, but they produce the same signal. Or you can use a Y splitter if you only have one output. And that's, I forget who in the chat room made that suggestion, but he's correct. You just put a Y splitter on that one subwoofer output and send it to the two subs. As long as the two subs are powered, which most are, then that you'll be able to get that effect of two subs if you place them correctly. And with so little time, I can't tell you how to place them correctly. We'll have to wait for another time for that.
Yeah. We're out of time pretty much, but I do want to point people to Scott's great podcast. You interviewed, as I did this week, for a later use, Mark Waldrep, who is really, really a great explainer of high quality music, how to
high
get the best
audio.
Yeah, how to get the best and no and how not to overspend on the best.
Yes. Yeah.
And so watch that. HomeTheaterGeeks.twit.tv/HTG. It was a great interview. And then AVSForum.com. That's where Scott is the editor. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru. Thanks for joining us. More of your calls coming up right after this. For those about to rock, we salute you. Yes, dear.
Is Scotty good to bring in on line two's question?
Yeah. Do we have a question for Scott?
Well,
sure.
It's the one I gave you, and I thought the two of yous could have fun with
line
it.
Line two is Arnold in San Francisco. Hi, Arnold.
Yes, Leo.
Hey, welcome. Scott Wilkinson's on the horn with us as well.
Okay. Well, here's my problem. I do not have cable. I have an HDTV antenna in the window, and I get all the San Francisco Bay Area stations.
You're lucky. That's over-the-air high def is the highest quality high def you can get on your TV.
Exactly. Yep.
Except for Blu-ray, maybe. You know, but
right. Yeah. Blu-ray's better still. But
TV, it's great.
Yeah, yep. And I get all the local stations, you know, Channel 2, Channel 4, 5, 7, 9, 20, 44. The only problem I have is with Channel 11, and their transmitter is in San Bruno, as opposed to being on Lone Mountain. And I wondered if you might have any ideas what I could do to increase the signal strength of that one.
What you really want is a directional antenna. These antennas are highly directional, these new HD antennas are generally. Cause
well, it depends on which antenna
you're using. It's UHF.
What I've got
Do you get anything on that channel
from 11
when you tune that in?
Sometimes. And then sometimes I get a signal, and then sometimes it just goes away.
What you'd probably want? Oh, Channel 11 in San Francisco is VHF. No,
that's still VHF.
Is
I think.
It?
I'm not sure now. It's
the new digital. Well, anyway, what you might want is a second antenna, right? Pointed at the different mountain.
I don't have that option because I just have my my one window faces west. And that's the only way I can have it. And it says my antenna is a multi-directional antenna. Leaf Metro.
You might try. There are antenna amplifiers. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% sure that would work. You just might not have a strong enough signal coming from San Bruno down there to allow a clean signal to get to your TV, especially, yes, it's multi-directional, that the antenna is multi-directional, but if your building, is your building older? Does it have like lath and plaster walls?
It's pointing out the window, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is, but it's pointing in the wrong direction.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
So if
the other problem is the distance, because this channel has a South Bay station, so it's also more distant.
That's also true.
Yeah.
That's also true. It's probably not over the horizon. It needs to be line of sight. I can't recall now whether San Bruno would
AntennaWeb.org is a great site.
That's a great place. Yes, absolutely.
Consumer Electronics Association does that. It will tell you what stations you may or may not be able to get. It can even recommend antennas that are appropriate for the station.
What's it called again?
AntennaWeb.
Okay.
Just Google AntennaWeb.
Okay.
And I think it's .org.
All right.
It's a nonprofit site.
All right.
Creamy Corn Cob has a great idea, too. Maybe try a roof antenna if you have access to your roof.
No, I do not.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then that won't work.
Remember we used to have dials on the antennas and we'd aim them?
I still have that on my rooftop antenna.
Yeah.
I have a little dial, and the antenna is motorized.
Right.
So you turn the dial and you go outside and you see the antenna go moving around. Because we have all of our broadcast stations come from Mount Wilson, and all the broadcasters are there. So you only have to point in that one direction, and you get everything.
Most of San Francisco comes from one place, but unfortunately, this is the San Jose station.
Yeah, Moto Chick is saying you need a straight shot to San Bruno.
We got to run. Thank you for the call, though. I appreciate it. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. We go back to the phones and Tony in Las Vegas. Hi, Tony.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
Well, I've been for the past couple weeks, I've been having this problem with my Android phone. And it seems to be just connected to Google Apps. If I try to load Gmail or Hangouts or anything that's Google-related, I get a, unfortunately, this app has stopped working.
Hey, okay. So because it's all the Google Apps, it means that the underlying Google Services app is probably broken or needs to be updated. So what Google did a while ago, because remember, you're hearing a lot about the fact that Google, the Android phones aren't getting updated, there are security flaws in the phones, and this is a side effect. It's not Google's fault exactly. It's a side effect of Google deciding to make Android open. So Apple, because it's closed, can enforce and does updates. In fact, so far, it looks like more than half of all iOS devices have already been updated to iOS 9. So Apple makes those updates available across all carriers. It's part of their deal with the carriers. And because they control the operating system and they're the only people who make it, they can do that. Android, you don't have to have Google's cooperation to put Android on a phone. There are many thousands of Android phones out there, and many of them are not getting updated. So Google, realizing this was becoming an increasing problem, started, and this is good news for you, moving some of the things that would be deep within the Android operating system, some of the services, into standalone apps that are actually downloadable and updatable from the Google Play Store. And they did that because then they can, via the store, they have a mechanism to update those apps. Sometimes when you get a new Android device, you'll see as you start installing apps, you can't run this app. It needs to be updated. And it's my guess, because it's all of the Google programs, it's a common app. In a normal operating system, you'd say it's a common library that they're all using. But the way Google's extracted these, I think, is great. Out of the operating system, put them in the store looking like apps. They have no user interface. So I would make sure you've got all your updates done. And if you get an error message on a specific service, Google service, that's what you need to update. Make sure you not only update from the carrier, go to About Phone and do the software updates that the carrier offers, but make sure you get all the updates from the Google Play Store. If you've done that, it could be that, it's just damaged. Now, that's a little bit more of an issue because it's hard to uninstall it, but you can do that. If you go into the apps, you can manage those apps. There's apps that you've downloaded. You'll see in the applications control panel. There's apps you've downloaded, and there's apps that are pre-installed. Look for the Google services in there, and you might delete those. Oh, gosh, is that safe? This is a kind of a brave new world because of the way Google's doing it now. I tell you, you can't delete them anyway. You'd have to disable them. Here's what you do. There's a button that says uninstall updates. Go through the Google services in the installed apps and uninstall updates, and then go to the Google Play Store and run it, and you'll see the updates for those and reinstall them. It may just be that those have been damaged. If it still doesn't work, probably what you're going to have to do is rebuild the phone. And I know that's a big pain. It's a little easier with Google than some phones because you can go again into your settings and make sure that you're backing up all the information from your phone to Google. You see in backup and reset, there's a backup command there. Make sure the boxes are checked, and you can even say force a backup now. And then you'll want to go through the reset and erase all your data and erase all your apps. You'll have to re-download them. Most of that's pretty automatic. Google remembers what apps you had installed and will reinstall those, and that should fix it. It's almost certainly a library, a Google service that's not working properly, and that's why all those Google apps are crashing. Good luck. Kevin, you're coming up. Carl in Irvindale, California. Irwindale. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going great. How you doing?
Great. Question. Once a month, I have family and friends over, and we barbecue and watch a movie in my front yard. I have a projector screen.
How fun. I like that.
It's a blast.
Yeah.
So a few people... Have a little hard of hearing. I have an old stereo system, surround sound system that I set up.
Yeah.
So I got to run the wires across the lawn and everywhere, so it kind of gets tangled up every once in a while. But I was wondering if there's an option to be able to broadcast either an FM or maybe Bluetooth, so that way everybody that has either hard of hearing or people just don't want to listen to the speakers or have no audio at all and be able to watch and listen on your headphones. Is there a device that could do that?
I might loop in Scott Wilkinson on this one. I don't know if he's... Are you listening to this, Scott, as we talk?
I just heard the very end of it.
That's a great idea, especially on a warm night. He sets up a projector and the family gets outside and watches a movie all together. It's like a drive-in.
Outdoor home theater. I love it.
Your personal drive-in. But some of the people are a little hard of hearing. There is a technology hearing aids support. Not all hearing aids, but that will allow you to do that. They're designed actually for in the home as well. What is it? Loop? Teleloop? I can't remember the name. I'll figure that out.
That's an older technology. It's like an RF technology.
Yeah. Is there something more modern? I like the idea of Bluetooth.
I think you should use Bluetooth, yeah.
So do TVs come with a Bluetooth audio?
Not usually, no. But this is a good question that I haven't really researched, but I'm trying to right now.
How about a
transmitter?
I think some receivers now have Bluetooth in them, don't they?
Well, Bluetooth reception.
Ah.
So that you can stream from your phone or your iPad.
Not output.
But output. Bluetooth transmitter is what I'm looking for.
Yeah. You can do you could do a micro power FM transmitter. That's legal.
Yeah, you could do that. Yeah, you could.
In fact, the guy we talk to every year, somebody in the chat room reminds me, the guy we talk to every year, thank you, Sybil, about his Christmas display that has exactly that. You tune your radio as you drive it to the Christmas display to his low-power FM transmitter, and then you can hear the music in your car.
Yeah.
Here's somebody in the chat
room. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just noticing a couple of links from Dale Poco. Click Americana, drive-in theater speaker car. I don't know if that's any good. And Source, here's an interesting one. I'll put this link in the show notes because it's kind of weird. It's a Whole House FM transmitter.
Whole house.
Yeah, so what it would do is it's analog. You plug the analog output from your source, your Blu-ray or whatever you're using to play, into
or your
this.
AD receiver, yeah.
Yeah, and this would be basically an FM radio. And then, Grandpa and Grandma have to get an FM receiver.
Yeah, like a Walkman or something.
Yeah, a lot of things will do that. So this is from Source FMtransmitter.com. It's called Source. Interesting idea.
There's a bunch of Bluetooth transmitters I've found just by Googling
Bluetooth is limited range. You know, they're only about 30 feet.
Yeah, no, you're right about
limited, that. Limited range, and I was hoping to broadcast to multiple devices.
Right.
So I don't know if you can do multiple
Bluetooth,
devices.
You pair it. Not every.
Oh,
yeah.
That's true.
So
that's
this,
true.
I think this is
FM
it.
FM is probably the better.
And the neighbors can listen. You're doing a little radio show in the backyard.
Yeah, I like it.
Hey, thanks to the chat room. We're actually getting a few of these from the chat room, so we'll put them in the show notes, techguylabs.com. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. More right after this. Stay here. Yeah, I didn't realize you could get an FM transmitter that easily. It's $124. Actually, it's even less, $125. Clever idea. I'm going to let Scott take over here because this is the time when Scott Wilkinson gets to tell the truth about home theater.
I do my best.
Yeah.
Titus has a great idea. Project the image into the pool at night. You can watch the videos while swimming.
You know, one thing that's amazing when you see these concerts is the projection technology. I may have mentioned this before after the Madonna concert.
Oh, I didn't. No, you didn't. Yeah, it must be. That must have been
really
great.
But all of the concerts now are using if you watch the Video Music Awards, the MTV Video Music Awards, they effectively don't need to do a set anymore. They can do a limited set. Or even the Olympics, the final the closing ceremonies of the Olympics, the projection technologies are so good that you really can create an illusion that people are in all sorts. It's like better than green screen. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. Did you see it? Was it Beijing or Sochi maybe?
Yeah.
Where the whole
wasn't that
floor
cool?
Yeah. was projected image, and they could make it a sea or mm-hmm. the sky or whatever. It was great.
So a lot of rock concerts now use that. The AC/DC, they begin. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw this, Lisa. You were, I think, getting something to eat, but the beginning of the concert, they launch They launch a rocket off the moon,
and
did you see it? It was so cool.
Wow.
It was so cool. Yeah.
They always have amazing graphics. And
yeah. Anyway, all yours, Scott. I will.
Thank you so much.
Your way.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that very much. Hey, everybody in the chat room. Good to see you. Mike Heiss is in the chat room, and today is his birthday. Happy birthday, Mike. Woo. We're very happy that you are here and in the chat room, and I'm very glad to call you my friend. Mike's been on the show more than once, and he is a jolly good CEDIA fellow, and so lots, very, very long and established career in the industry that that I enjoy. So, so yeah, we've been talking, as I said, about this one AV receiver called the TX-NR646 from Onkyo. And it says, you know, this is one of my pet peeves, I got to tell you. The question was, people say that it's a 7.2 AV receiver, which should mean that it's got seven main channels and two subwoofer channels. But and it looks to me, it's a little confusing, but when I look at the back panel, it looks like that there are two subwoofer outputs. They're not labeled very well. One of them is labeled sub, and one of them is labeled pre-out. But there are no other pre-outs. Sometimes AV receivers will have preamp outputs that bypass the amplifiers in the AV receiver. This one only has one pre-out, and it's directly below the sub-out, and both of them are RCA connectors, and they have the same color code. They're both purple. So that leads me to believe that they're both subwoofer outputs. But calling it 7.2 lets you know that it has two subwoofer outputs, presumably, but it doesn't tell you that those two subwoofer outputs are carrying the same signal. Let's see. Someone in the chat room also mentioned that that it's sometimes called a 5.1.2 Atmos setup, and that means five main channels, one subwoofer output, and two speakers on the ceiling for the Atmos effect, or shooting up and reflecting off the ceiling. So in that case, it's specified as a 5.1, one subwoofer, and in the other case, it's specified as a 7.2. Very confusing. The main point I want to get across right here is that even if you have multiple subwoofers, two typically, or even more, they are, generally speaking, going to carry the same signal. At least the same LFE signal, and even the same base managed signal. If you've got your AV receiver set up as I do and most people do in a home theater system, where the frequencies below say 100 or 80 hertz or so, 100 or 80 hertz or so, that those frequencies below that crossover point, as it's called, get redirected to the subwoofer. But they get redirected to all the subwoofers, any subwoofer in the system. And they're all carrying the same signal. They're all reproducing the same signal, which is why I tend not to call such a system. Say if you had seven main channels and two subwoofers, I'd still call it a 7.1 system. That would refer to the signal. If you call it 7.2, you're referring to the number of speakers. And those two things don't always match up, in this case, particularly with subwoofers. So it's a confusing thing. There's no question about it. Let's see. Creamy Corn Cob asks, couldn't you wire two 8-ohm subs in series and get 4 ohms and use a single sub out? Well, that's a little tricky, too, because the impedance of a subwoofer is not the same as an impedance of a speaker, because it's getting a line-level signal, not a speaker-level signal, and it has its own amplifier built in. I don't remember what the input impedance of a powered subwoofer typically is. Maybe Mike Heiss in the chat room can help me with that. But yes, if you do you know, wire them in series, then you, which is like one right after the other, like a daisy chain, you could possibly do it that way. Many subs, in fact, have a loop through so that you can come in and then the signal comes back out and goes to the next one. Or you can use now wait a minute now, series, I'm going back to my old electronics days. Isn't when you put them in series, don't they add? And when you put them in parallel, the total impedance decreases. I have to go back and look at my old textbooks for that. Yes, Dexter, exactly. Series increases the ohm, parallel lowers the ohms. That's what I'm remembering. That is correct. So that might not work depending on if you have a loop through from one sub to the next. And putting a Y splitter on a single subwoofer output would indeed lower the impedance that the output sees. But I suspect the input impedance of the subwoofer of a subwoofer at the line level input is quite a bit higher than a speaker level impedance, like 8 ohms or 6 ohms or 4 ohms. It's probably much higher than that. Wenko, exactly. Line level is often 600 ohms. So that, you know, you'd kind of have to try it and see. There's no danger there. Yes, exactly, Lawn Dog. That's what I was about to say. If you have a loop through, that is the signal comes into the input on the subwoofer and then there's an output that goes to the next subwoofer, there is circuitry in there to keep the impedance constant. That doesn't change the impedance if the subwoofer is well designed, shall we say. So that's the answer to that question. Let's see. Got any other questions in here? Because that's been a good topic of conversation, certainly in our thing here. Oh, Mom Calling. That's right. Mom Calling was talking about, she has a Vizio E-Series 28-inch TV that has very fluorescent colors. And I said in the chat room, select picture or movie mode. And that didn't work. So what will work, we're not sure yet. We're going to keep working on it.
Thank you,
thanks,
Scott.
Leo.
See you next time.
You betcha.
Bob on. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk, let's see, what should we talk about? Well, computers, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, 888-827-5536. Back to the phones we go, and it's Yoon in Los Angeles. Hi, Yoon.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Wow, I've been waiting 35 minutes.
Well, that's pretty short, actually.
very
we have people waiting an hour and a half sometimes. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
I'm so sorry, but I talk a lot, and there's other people on the radio. You know how that is.
But, I have a question. I'm planning to go trip for 2 weeks in Italy.
Oh,
and
nice.
Yes, thank you. I'm taking my iPhone, iPad, and a Mac Air computer.
Great. And you don't want to be disconnected in Italy, I take it.
Right. And I need calls. LA every day. Not too long, but every day. So I'd like to know if I take computer, there won't be any extra charge, right?
Best way to do it, yeah. Probably the hotel you're staying at will have Wi-Fi. Right. Certainly there are lots of internet cafes in Italy, lots of ways to use free Wi-Fi. And if you can get free Wi-Fi, then you can do a FaceTime call. Or you could do a Skype call and call for free to another computer in the States. And if you set that up ahead of time, that's probably the best way to do it. In fact, they'll see video. So you can show them out the window. And where in Italy are you going?
I'm going to Verona, Roma, Milan, a couple different cities.
I'm so jealous. Oh, that's going to be wonderful.
Two more questions about the same one. I have an iPad paying $30 per month.
Who's the carrier you're using that with?
All of them is AT&T.
So you can go to AT&T for the phone, and I think for the iPad as well, and buy international data. If you don't do that, do not, whatever you do, use the data on your iPhone and your iPad. It'll be very expensive. That's called data roaming. When you use, and remember, I'm talking, there's two different things a phone does. One is voice for phone calls, and one is the internet. And the iPad does only the internet. Although I guess you can use the internet for voice too on the iPad. So in both cases, those have data connections. But what you don't want to do is use an Italian data carrier without making a prearranged deal, because it's very expensive.
Oh, so iPad, maybe it's better leave it at home.
Yeah, you got a computer and a phone. I don't know if you need the iPad too. The iPad on Wi-Fi is going to be fine. As long as you have, you know, your hotel has Wi-Fi, you could check ahead to see. If your hotel has affordable Wi-Fi, your iPad will work great when you're in the hotel.
The problem is that I have I have a carrier AT&T. I don't want them to charge me international data.
Right. So in both on both the iPad and the iPhone, you can disable international data roaming. It's called data roaming. You go into your settings, and in the cellular settings, you'll see there's a switch for data roaming, and you want to make sure that that is turned off. And that's then you're completely safe. If you turn off data roaming, it's not going to use any of the Italian carrier. Now, as I said, you can go to AT&T, and they sell packages of international data. It's still expensive. But I would do it. I would get a small package for your phone, and I'll tell you why. As you're wandering around Verona, and you have your phone with you, and you get lost, then you turn on data roaming, and you quickly load a map, and you say, how do I get home? And you get home, and then you turn data roaming off again. That's only going to be maybe a few hundred megabytes at most. So if you buy a small package, just so that you have that emergency capability.
For iPhone already, I purchased a passport.
Okay, that's what they call it. Yeah, the AT&T passport. That's it.
Right.
Yep.
At $120 for just for 2 weeks.
For it's not the time that counts. It's the amount of number of megabytes you're going to watch. Put the AT&T app on your phone and watch very carefully what they say you're using, and don't go over it.
800 megabytes. What does it include? International data roaming.
That's everything. But it's easy to go over 800 megabytes. You go over that every month, so I'm sure. You just have to use the My AT&T app and watch and see. Don't use the iPhone usage app. It's not as accurate. Before you leave, put the AT&T app on there, and it'll tell you how much data you've used. And just stop at 750, because I'll tell you, it costs you a lot if you go over 800.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Any other tips?
One thing sometimes people like to do, and when you get to Italy, you'll see that you could, if you have an unlocked phone, put an Italian SIM in there, but then you have an Italian phone number. You'll have local data, which will be cheaper. But I think most of the time what I've just described is the best. It's how I usually do it. I don't usually put a SIM in there. Although I think it's a good idea to know about it. And there are another thing you can do, and I've done this. I did this in London last time we were there. You can buy what they call a MiFi card. You might have seen these. They're credit card-sized Wi-Fi access points that use the 4G or 3G data and then turn it into a Wi-Fi, which then you can still turn off international data on your phone, your iPad, and your computer, but you can use that MiFi as local data. And since you can rent that there in Italy, it's cheaper often to do that. Just depends on, in most cases, I find the Wi-Fi in the hotel and the internet cafes is enough for me to stay in touch, to make the phone calls, check my email, things like that. And then as I'm wandering around, I don't really need data. You got the biggest package AT&T offers at 800 megabytes. Just be judicious in your use of it. If you can't use your phone the way you would at home, because you'll easily blow through that. You'll have to see, but I 3 or 4 megabytes a month is typical. And you have 800 megabytes for 2 weeks. So you're about half what your normal usage would be. So use it judiciously. Don't use it all the time. Use Wi-Fi whenever you can. But I do think it's a great thing to have, because having a map or even just say, well, where can I eat around here? I mean, that has changed travel. What is that building I'm looking at? And you can look it up and you can see and you can read about it. You have the amazing travel guide. You have the internet in your pocket. Just be careful about how you use data. You know, don't start sending. What uses it up is sending pictures, downloading music or podcasts, watching TV or streaming video. Don't watch Netflix while you're in Italy. Do not. It might be tempting. On the Wi-Fi, fine. Not while you're wandering around on 3G. But have a great trip. I'm Italy. Oh, this time of year. Oh, you'll be eating ravioli and risotto. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question. We also put the stuff I talk about in the website, which is techilabs.com. And you know what else I'll do for you, Yoon, is there is a wiki, really good wiki, called Prepaid with Data. That is a kind of a user crowdsourced website with costs, availability, lots of information about getting data in internationally. And it's really useful. And travelers just put the stuff up there, and it's fairly current because it's a wiki. That means they can modify it. It's at Wikia, W-I-K-I-A. So it's prepaidwithdata.wikia.com. But, you know, if you just Google prepaid with data, you'll find it. Or go to our website. We have it there, techguylabs.com. And in some ways, it's too easy to travel now. I remember when I was a kid and we went to Europe, and you couldn't find the baseball scores till you got the International Herald Tribune 3 days later. Now it's like you can get anything anytime. It's just like you're being at home. That's no fun. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Yeah, I agree. You can use offline. I should have said that, and I've said that in the past. Here Maps is a great choice, H-E-R-E. It's on iOS and Android. You can download the app for free and then download all of Italy, and you'll have a map. But it isn't as up-to-date with points of interest and things like that. So if what you're trying to do is, like, where's the nearest restaurant? What are the reviews and stuff? It's still nice to have data. But, yeah, I always do that. Before I go somewhere, I download the maps from Here Maps. You know where else it's fun is if you're flying, you know, you're in airplane mode, but you can leave the GPS on. They allow you to do that. And if you have Here Maps on there and you've already entered the data, you can watch yourself flying. You can, it's so cool. You can see yourself moving over a map. You know exactly where you are. We also found that useful on the river cruise because, you know, we're sailing along. You look out the window. You know, you look. You know, I'm on the deck. I'm looking. It's beautiful. But I have no idea where I am. We had this. I used it in one place particularly. We were in the canal that joins the Rhine River with the Main River. This long canal. And at one point, you go from Germany into Austria. But there's no sign, no fireworks or anything. But I'm watching on Here Maps as we're moving down the river, and I'm going, "Oh, we're in Austria." And the guy also on the deck said, "Yeah, I see that." He was doing the same thing. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, shaking and rattling and rolling and talking high tech at 8888. Ask Leo. We're talking in the chat room a little bit about VW. What a story that is. You know, and part of the reason that that happened, that VW was able to cheat, and by the way, this is the long history of doing this, not just in cars, but software can always cheat. PC manufacturers have done this for years. Benchmarks are less important than they used to be. In the old days, you'd always, you know, before you bought a computer, you'd look at the benchmarks. I have many friends who spent long hours in labs for PC Magazine and other magazines testing computers. And the software they used were benchmark tests. And you'd run the benchmark and then you'd say, well, this computer is capable of, you know, rendering 53 frames per second or whatever it was. But for a long time, computer manufacturers would have software on their computer that would detect when a benchmark was running and optimize performance, improve performance, just as VW did with their emissions controls. They would look and see if, are we on a dynamometer, whatever that's called, the spinning wheelie thingy? Are we on one of them? All right, turn on the ignitions. And then every the rest of the time, turn off the emissions. They'd always pass the test, but as soon as they hit the road, they were spewing sulfur dioxide like nobody's business. It's not unique. There's another little bit of a tech angle to this, because the software on these cars is protected by the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, our favorite little law, the DMCA. It is illegal to reverse engineer this software, which is a shame. You know, of course, that law is designed to protect, you know, proprietary intellectual property built into that software. But had researchers been able to reverse engineer it legally, I think they would have found the offending code pretty quickly. There's a lot of things we'd like to be able to analyze, things like voting machines, and even operating systems. See, you know, who's snooping on us? Who's got that operating system wired up so that they can see what we're doing online? Well, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act prevents anybody from looking into it, and there's some fairly severe penalties if you do. So, you know, this is an example of how that can backfire. Nobody's pirating the software in a VW, but it would have been nice if researchers could have examined it. Ivan in Fontana, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ivan.
Hi, Leo. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing just peachy.
Peachy keen?
I'm actually calling because I'm a truck driver. I'm going to be going back out over the road. And I was wondering if you can give me some suggestions for two items. One, a dash cam that has a wide-angle lens. I need, you know, record just about everything in front of my truck.
That's such a good idea, isn't it? Because and most of these dash cams, I mean, there's different ways you can go. Some record all the time. Some, if there's an accident, they have a buffer that they record several minutes or an hour at a time. And then if there's an accident, that stops the buffer and you have, you know, from the beginning before the accident to the end of it.
Right.
Yeah, I am not up on these. I know we've done some reviews here at my podcast network, but I wasn't privy to those. Maybe somebody in the chat room has a preference. There's a lot of them, aren't there?
Yeah, there's quite a few. Especially
yeah, if you go on Amazon and you look for dash cams, you'll see a lot of companies. I would tend to recommend the companies that are well known, like Garmin, which makes a dash cam. But I don't know if it's the best there is. It's just that I know the name Garmin. You probably used Garmin GPSs for years, I would guess.
Right. Yeah. Well, I use Rand McNally truck GPS.
Okay. PC World just reviewed this week some dash cams, and they looked at a wide variety of prices, ranging from $100 for the Yada to $400 for the Garmin Nuvi cam. A lot of people have recommended the Nuvi cam. It's a little expensive. There's a less expensive Garmin, the Dash Cam 20, which has been around for a while. Cobra makes some. You know Cobra. Do you have a CB in there?
Yeah.
So it makes sense. These companies, you know, if you're in the CB or the standalone GPS business, you're probably looking pretty hard for a new business right about now. So it makes sense that Cobra and Garmin might be, in fact, making some cameras. I'll tell you what, I will put a link to this this article from PC World. It's not exactly exhaustive. John Jacoby did this, but at least give you some choices and some pros and cons. He reviews six different ones. All of them use a 12-volt power supply, so it can hook into your car power supply via the cigarette lighter or the auxiliary power outlet, as they're called now, since nobody smokes. What you want, of course, is one that will give you not only time and date, but ideally GPS coordinates. And if they have GPS built in there, they'll set the time via GPS. He says the KD-Lynx X1 is the only one he tested that didn't automatically set the time via GPS. You want that time to be, of course, accurate.
Right.
Because one of the reasons you're doing this is in case there's an accident, so you have a record of it. You also want night vision, which is pretty important. They'll all do well in daytime, but how well do they do at night? I'll tell you what. It's at PCWorld.com. It's a pretty good review. He said the best product which is for the purpose, I presume you want it, documenting accidents, should they happen.
Right.
Is the ThinkWare X500. He liked it for a variety. X500 is $280, so it's kind of in the middle of the price range. It has an integrated GPS, records both the front and the rear, which in a truck I think that would be helpful, wouldn't it? You'd have to buy the rear camera. That's sold separately. It also warns you about speed traps. That might be handy. In case there are any smokies up ahead, right?
Yeah. Smokies on Saturday Road with Patrick.
Yeah. You are a CB operator.
My other question is, I need a portable Wi-Fi hotspot standalone other than my carrier. I have 5 gigs on my current plan with T-Mobile, but I'm looking for something else that could, stand alone.
I just ordered, and I haven't gotten it yet. They're making them in batches. Something called the Karma Go. It's at yourkarma.com. It's exactly what you're talking about. It's like a MiFi. It's a Wi-Fi access point that uses 3G or 4G data. They have a flat rate. You pay for the data you use, which I like. So you don't pay any extra if you don't use more data. But I haven't got it yet. Yourkarma.com. I ordered it some months ago. They're making these in batches. So it might be worth checking out anyway. Yourkarma.com. I think they use the Sprint network, and that might be a disadvantage. The price is right, though, $149. And then I think $15 per gigabyte of data, which is a pretty fair price. Freedom Pop does something similar as well. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by a great company for anybody who is in charge of hiring, ZipRecruiter. Do you know about I've talked about ZipRecruiter with you before, haven't I? ZipRecruiter is a really cool idea. If you're a business owner, I think hiring is probably the single most important thing you do. The people you hire form your company. They are, they're your team, and you want to get the right team members. ZipRecruiter makes that easy. I mean, ZipRecruiter is piggybacking on the fact that there are now lots of job sites out there, right? Of course, each job site has, a different group of people and maybe some focuses. Wouldn't it be cool just to post them all? 100-plus job boards? You can at ZipRecruiter. That's exactly how it works. One click of the mouse and you're posting to 100-plus job boards, including social networks like Craigslist and Twitter. You're getting to everybody out there, LinkedIn. You're getting all the people. And they also have their own database of more than 6 million resumes, current resumes. So it makes it so easy. As soon as you set up your account and you post your job listing on ZipRecruiter, you're going to start getting applicants directly. The nice thing is they don't call you. They don't end up in your email box. They go right into ZipRecruiter's sweet interface, which allows you to rate the candidates immediately, screen them, and hire the right one fast, within a couple of days. So important to hire the right people, and this is the best way to do it. 400,000 companies now use ZipRecruiter. It's fast. It's easy. If you're doing the hiring, you are going to love it, and I want you to try it free today. 4 days free. Dan, a happy ZipRecruiter client, sent us an email. He said, the hardest part about running a business is when you need to hire is that you have to spend extra time recruiting while you're short-staffed, right? You're already covering for the person who's not there, and now you got to hire too. But with ZipRecruiter, I've gotten quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster by letting me manage candidates all in one place. I love it. ZipRecruiter.com. You're going to love it, true. Here's the deal. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/techguy, and you can try it for free. Why not then, right? ZipRecruiter.com/TechGuy. We thank him so much for a foot in the bill for the Tech Guy podcast. I've been everywhere, man. That's Johnny Jett. He is everywhere. Johnny Jett's our travel guru, and it's only fitting that a guy who is a travel guru should travel. Johnny's website, JohnnyJett.com, that's where he covers all kinds of travel and has travel deals, and he gives us travel tips each and every week on the show. Hi, Johnny.
How you doing, Leo?
You're somewhere in the world. Where in the world is Johnny Jet? I don't know where.
It's not America.
It's not America.
But it's very similar, except it's a little bit safer and cleaner. And the people are nicer, for the most part.
Well, now that doesn't sound like anywhere. Denmark? I don't know. Nope. Where are you?
I'm in Toronto, Canada.
Ah, in Toronto. Yeah, people are very nice in Canada, until they're not. Then they can be mean. Yeah. A lot of that's
explain that one.
Well, I think that's what happens. If you're nice a lot, you know, you bury your resentments. Sometimes they blow. And they all come out at once.
Really? I guess you have some experience
with
this.
I'm warning you. I'm just saying. they always make the joke that if you bump into a Canadian, he'll apologize. Oh, I'm so sorry. And that's, for the most part, true. They're very polite, very clean, very nice.
Yeah.
They're well-dressed as well.
Yeah, they say, how do you get a Canadian to say you're sorry?
Say them
sorry. You step on their toes.
Step on their toes. So Johnny usually joins us each and every week, besides the stereotyping, the national stereotyping, with which I participated in gladly. I went to Canada 1 week a month for years to do a TV show, and I feel like I'm an honorary Canadian. I love it up there. I really do.
Hey, I love Canada so much, I married one.
But stay out of Toronto in the winter.
Yes, that should be my travel tip.
Well, actually, it's somewhere worse, Winnipeg. But that's another story for another day. So Johnny gives us travel advice via an app every week and a website.
An app and a website. So this website, actually, I learned about from the Today Show. I was watching it last week, and they talked about how, you know, these hackers are always targeting travelers all around the world. And so, you know, when you land, when you're in tourist attractions, you'll see the word free Wi-Fi network.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, whenever you see the word free Wi-Fi, you know, most of the time you want to stay away, 99% of the time.
Yeah.
So they were interviewing this guy from SkyCure. And so my website is actually maps.skycure.com, which I assume it's like a you know, these guys are probably just selling their VPN. But what's pretty cool is that this map that they have, you can type in any location and it will tell you which ones, you know, which Wi-Fi networks you want to stay away from.
MapCure.com?
Maps. Maps.SkyCure.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maps.SkyCure.com. Okay. And it says, well, I mean, stay away from everything unless you know it's good, right? I mean, it seems like they should go the other direction, since you can't always know what to stay away from.
So you can type in anywhere in the world. Typed in LAX, and it just brings up different ones. But you can type in SFO.
And there's they actually know that there are people at these places that have set up illegal access spots.
No, I think it's just bringing them up, and it shows them, you know, which ones are risky. I don't know how they're bringing them up.
So they say, don't use Panera Bread's Wi-Fi.
I guess because they're saying that, you know, a hacker could
don't
easily...
Don't use the Hyatt in San Francisco's Wi-Fi.
Really? The free Wi-Fi?
Yeah. This is a little sketch.
I'm a little skeptical.
Because they're also offering software to protect your device.
I use a VPN when I travel.
That's true of all Wi-Fi. They're saying the British Airlines Lounge Wi-Fi is dangerous, so download our software. I don't think so.
I'm sorry for wasting your time.
You don't waste my time, but the message is correct. When you're on an open Wi-Fi access point, they're all dangerous. Use a VPN if you really want to protect yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially like on trains and planes and all that stuff. I remember one of my buddies, you know, logged on to Amtrak's Wi-Fi, and he's like, check this out. And he started, streaming the guy in front of him's Facebook page, which was, you know, a little scary.
That is a very well-known exploit, which I think has been fixed, but yes, still scary. Yeah, terrifying.
So I got my app's a little better than my website. So last week I came to you from LAX where I was doing some filming.
Well, that was so cool.
Yeah, it was great. It was awesome. But while I was walking through the airport, I saw some guy with a purple T-shirt on that said Skirt Rental Cars. And I was like, I'd never heard of them.
So
S-K-U-R-T. Their website's skirtapp.com. S-K-U-R-T-A-P-P.com.
Skirt app.
So they're only available at LAX right now and only on iPhone. But you're going to love it whenever you visit LAX, you know, because it's
a lot
like
Silver. Well, wait a minute now. You got me using Silver Card LAX. Is this better?
It's a lot like Silver Card, except you're just not getting an Audi A, you know,
nowadays you may not want an Audi A4.
That's true. After this past week.
Yeah.
So with these guys, you know, they will rent you, you know, a convertible. They'll rent you, you know, a Mercedes. They'll rent you, you know, I love their lingo, you know, like a solid car, which is a Toyota Corolla or an SUV. And it gives you the prices. You can do midsize or full size. But what's great about these guys is that, you know, you make your appointment and they will meet you at the curbside or baggage claim and walk you to the car. And same kind of setup as Silver Card.
One thing that Silver Card did in LAX, I don't know if they do this in every airport, but they do meet you at the curb, but then they drive you. It's not so much different from a rental car because they drive you then to their facility, and also you use the app, which does simplify things considerably. Do these guys, you actually get in the car this guy brings you?
Well, I haven't used it, but it appears to me that they bring the car to the terminal. So you only need to get on. They're not driving you, and you don't need to get on a bus. They say no more sweaty buses, but they might drive you. I have to try it out. I
tell you, even getting driven is better than a sweaty bus. You're absolutely right. Yeah,
without doubt. But I know for sure that when you go to drop the car off, you pick them up right before the airport, drive them to the airport, and then they take the car when you get out.
Nice. So you leave the that's a huge time savings. You leave the rental at the airport.
Exactly.
You don't have to go to because that's the sweaty bus that you really don't want is the one where you're late for your flight and you're sitting in a bus going nice.
And there's actually I'm not sure if they're still around, but there's actually a valet parking. It's called LAX Valet Parking, I think, or I used to use it a year or two ago. And same thing, I would pick them up right before the airport. I would drive their valet in my car. I would drive right to the terminal. You know, my credit card would be on file. I just sign a piece of paper, and then he would take my car.
Wow.
And then when I landed, I would call him up, and my car would be waiting there, right there where I wanted. And I usually had them pick me up at departures.
You don't have to hug him goodbye, though, do you?
No, but I always give him a good tip.
Yeah, I do too. I do too, because I feel like they might have to run back to the office since you took the car. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Skurt with a U, S-K-U-R-T app.com. You know, I made my Silver Car, I'm going to L.A. next week. I made my Silver Car, because I didn't know about this yet, reservation already.
Right.
Maybe I should change it and do Skurt.
I love Silver Car. We've talked about it many times, but I'd be interesting to see what you think about these guys.
And we should mention,
I live in L.A., so I have no reason to rent a car in L.A.
Yeah, those are not diesel A4s at Silver Car. They're gasoline powered A4s. So you know, they're not the engines that were causing all the kerfuffle last week.
Right.
Johnny Jet Travels. He's been everywhere, man. Are you going to be home next week?
I'm not. I'm gone for the next few weeks.
You're taking your wife around the world again.
Yeah. Well, she could be taking me.
Okay, this time it's her turn. She can drag you around the world. That sounds like fun. Have a great trip, and we'll talk to you wherever you are next week. Thanks. Here. JohnnyJet.com. Follow him on Instagram, @JohnnyJet, on Twitter, too. He's got great pictures and great information. And don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere. So, Johnny.
So, you know, I didn't mention, by the way, is that there was a really good deal. I'm just looking. I was going to send a deals newsletter. $397 round trip from Portland to China.
What? Where in China?
Taxes and fees, Guangzhou.
Ah, that's why. you figure out how to get anywhere after that. No, Guangzhou is great.
They're making probably 50 cents on a ticket, the airline.
It's probably not a big destination, though. It's not Beijing. It's not Shanghai.
Asia has been so cheap right now for tickets.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Don is in Mission Viejo as we continue on solving your tech woes. Hello, Don.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
And thank you for a great recommendation on a laptop PC I just picked up about a week ago.
What'd you get?
The Dell XPS 13.
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, what a great laptop.
Isn't it nice? Did you get the touchscreen or not?
I got the touchscreen. I got a fully loaded i7.
Yeah. If you're going to buy a computer these days, it makes sense to load it up. That way you'll get more years out of it, right?
And if I'm going to use it every day.
Yes, that's my – I've kind of came around to that. I've been you know, trying to be economical, and of course it's – I understand why you need to be economical sometimes. But if this is something you use day in, day out, it's a work tool, it's a workhorse, it feels like you should spend a little on yourself and get some – as good as you can anyway.
Agreed.
Yep.
Okay, Leah, so here's my problem. I purchased my house about 13 years ago, and this is one of these houses, and it was new at the time, where it came with the network box with a bunch of Ethernet jacks, you know, all over the house that you could plug in.
Oh,
and nice. It had a box, the box is in my daughter's room, with, you know, where the modem and the router are located, and they're squeezed in this little box. Where if you wanted to wire a certain section of the house, you would put that Ethernet jack into the router.
Nice.
Well, here's the problem, though, and I've changed the router once. So I'd like to get a new router, but the new routers, you see them, they all have these antennae.
Yeah, they're Wi-Fi. For the most part, people are buying Wi-Fi. You don't need it. You're one of the few, the proud, the hardwired.
Yes, but I do want to have the Wi-Fi. But I can't fit one of those in this box. And it's in
is
my
that small?
Closet, and it's in my in a closet.
Oh, man. Why'd they do that? Why did they do that?
Exactly.
Well,
is there a way to get around that?
Sure. You could easily put, in fact, this is what I would recommend. You put your cable modem in there or whatever the, it obviously is. That's what the data reception unit is, right?
Right.
So the cable modem's in there and perhaps a switch. Okay, a wired switch that would allow you to plug in those Ethernet cables. Then at any point that you want to put a wireless access point anywhere in the house, that's where you put it.
Oh, okay.
Because it's getting its data directly from the cable modem and then the switch. Generally speaking, I prefer to use my own router. In fact, if it is a cable modem and the cable company lets you buy your own cable modem, there's a lot to be said for that, too. You'll get something more modern. You won't have to pay a monthly fee in the long run, usually a year or two. That'll save you money. And by buying your own router, you're almost always going to get a better router.
Right.
So you've got – is it cable?
It is cable.
All right. So the cable company is going to give you something. Often they will give you a Wi-Fi router. You don't want that. If you can get them to just give you a bare modem, or better yet, if you say, can I go and buy an Aeris modem? What modems do you recommend? I'll just use my own modem. Then what you get is a modem and a router. I think that'd be the best thing to do. And that router is going to sit in there. Not a wireless router, but just a regular everyday router. Because what that's doing is doing the what we call the DHCP. It's doing the handoff. It's saying, because you only have one public internet address, but you need an address for every device in the house on the local internet. So that's what a router does. It's called network address translation. It hands out the data. So put that there, and you can still have Wi-Fi on one of those ports in the living room if you want, wherever it's convenient for you. In fact, you can have multiple Wi-Fis everywhere if you want.
That's perfect. That's the exact answer I was looking for.
Yeah. In if you do that, turn off DHCP in the Wi-Fi router. Let it be in what they call bridge mode, which means I'm not going to do any network handling. I'm just going to be a wireless transmitter and receiver.
Perfect. And to further your point, I was going to buy my own modem. I saw on the wire cutter, I think it was the Motorola.
Yeah.
Aeris SB.
Yeah, Motorola bought Aeris, which made the best cable modems. Make sure it matches, and the cable company will tell you, the specs that they offer. If they offer DOCSIS 3, get a DOCSIS 3 modem. That'll give you the highest speed. There's a new DOCSIS coming along, but I don't think it's out yet. So get the whatever the latest DOCSIS is. I think it's DOCSIS 3. I'll have to check. And they'll tell you what brands you can get, but Aeris is almost always okay. In fact, they probably use a Motorola modem in their installs. The thing is, it's old. It's been in service for 10 years, and four people have had it. You want to have your own.
Right. Leo, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. My pleasure. I'm jealous. Now, the one thing, I won't tell him this. Whoever put this little block box in your daughter's bedroom and did all the wiring probably used Cat 5 Ethernet. Depends when they did this. And of course, as you want to, as time goes by, you want to put more data, more bits down that Ethernet pipe. those network cables, you want to use better cables. There's Cat 6, Cat 6E, there's Cat 5E, there's even, I think, Cat 7. And the higher quality cables are able to transmit more data. Cat 5E can go to 100 megabits. Cat 6 can go to a gigabit. 6E can, or maybe it's 6E goes to a gigabit. So, but unfortunately, you're kind of stuck with whatever they put in there, which probably wasn't the more expensive Cat 5E or 6. It was probably Cat 5. So you'll be limited perhaps to 10 megabits on that. It just depends. Rerunning the cable's a pain unless they, and this is what we tell people now, thanks to the chat room, which advised me of this, put conduit in. Don't just put a cable there. Put a tube, because then it's easy to pull more and better cable as time goes by. Eventually, you might even want to put fiber optics in there. Because we're sending more richer data than ever before. Big, fat movies. But, hey, hardware is always better than Wi-Fi, I think. Cat 5 is 1 gigabit. Cat 5e is 10 gigabits. You say that, Jerry. I'm looking at the chat room. But that's pushing it. That's pushing it. I think you'd want a higher quality cable for a gigabit. 8888 Ask Leo. You can disagree and call me, or you can go to the website, techilabs.com. Put your thoughts there too. That's what we put the website there for. So it'll be a great resource. No sign up, no fee. Just visit techguylabs.com. No salesman will call. Our show today, and we're going to get back to the phones in just a second. I know Todd has been hanging on for a while in Sherman Oaks. He has a new iMac, and it's taken forever to start up. What? Todd Sherman Oaks, what kind of iMac did you get?
I got the 21.5-inch, the one in the middle. I didn't get the
top of the line. So it doesn't have an SSD, it has a spinning drive.
Yeah, I think it, yes, has a spinning drive.
Yeah.
I was replacing my first generation Intel, so it's like 10, 12 years
old. Oh, it should be a lot faster. How long does it take to boot?
Well, from the time I hit the button in the back until the time I can type in my password is 1 minute.
Oh, come on. Now, really? That's too slow? Come on. I'll tell you one of the things that takes longer than your old computer. How much RAM do you have in there?
8 gigs.
It's testing that RAM, you know. That's when you first see that gray screen, and like at the very beginning, it sits there for a while. That's the power on self test. Even Macs do those. PCs did them for years. And that takes longer because we have more RAM. 8 gigs of RAM takes a long time to test. I bet you that's more than four times what you had in the old computer. So you got to add a few seconds there. 1 minute is not awful. If you want to get faster than that, you're going to have to go to solid-state disks. Those boot really fast. You'd probably cut the speed in half. But Macs are not the fastest booting just because they go through some tests and some stuff right at the beginning there. And I think a minute's about normal. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography. Smartphones, yes, I have the new iPhone. Smartwatches, yes, I have watchOS 2.0. 8888. Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. You know, we were talking about the iPhone 6S, and I have the Plus in pink. Although, it's not completely pink. It's, I sound like I'm justifying. No, that's rose gold there. That's shining in the light. It's shimmery. It's pinkish. It's actually less pink than it looked like in the pictures. It's kind of a coppery. All right, who am I kidding? It's a pink phone, but I love it. I have to say, I'm very impressed. And I think if you've listened to me for a while, you know that I'm not an iPhone fanboy. I'm not loving it just because it has an Apple logo on it. I try to be that way with technology in general. The brand and the logo are they're not a feature. In fact, sometimes they're a disadvantage. The features are the camera, the screen, the processor, the memory. Those are features, not the Apple or the Samsung logo on the back. I have no allegiance to the logo. But I have to say, I've been using Android for some time. I prefer the openness of the Android platform, but that carries its own issues, doesn't it? I think one of the issues that, and you see this a lot lately, that Android and the openness and the kind of the loosey-goosey environment of the Android platform, as done on most Android phones, Samsung and LG and HTC and even the Nexus phones, is battery life suffers. Why? Well, you would say, but why would battery life suffer? You know, the thing about the hardware on the iPhone and the hardware on the Android phone, there's not a huge amount of difference. There's some. Because Apple makes its own chips, they're able to cut chunks out that aren't needed. Things like the ability to play back Flash is not supported in hardware. It doesn't have to be. But really, the biggest benefit, I think, in terms of battery life is the operating system. And by highly controlling the operating system and strictly limiting what applications can do, Apple's able to eke more battery life out of the same exact size battery and really roughly the same circuitry than any Android device maker has been able to this year. Last year, there was one Android phone that got good battery life. Maybe two. There were the Sony Xperias and the OnePlus One were able to get through the whole day. The rest of them, not so much. In fact, Android manufacturers, knowing this, have kind of started to tout the fast charging. Well, yeah, but you could plug the Moto X in, and within an hour, it's back to 100%. It only takes 30 minutes to get 10 hours. So does it matter that it doesn't go through the whole day? Yeah, because I can't always plug it in. Yes, it does matter. And Apple, especially with the big one, the iPhone 6S Plus, really seems to be able to do that. And I think a lot of that is because their operating system just shuts down applications. They aren't allowed to run in the background. Apple's strict. They're tough. And apps don't get to do whatever they want. On the other hand, Android allows apps to do a lot more, and so sometimes Android apps are much more capable. For instance, you cannot use a Wi-Fi detection program on an iPhone. Apple doesn't let you get access to the low-level Wi-Fi information. So if you want to do a Wi-Fi sniffer, you know, something that tests and sees what bands are the best and what kind of congestion you have, and it's very helpful. One of those is very helpful in diagnosing Wi-Fi issues. You're going to have to do it on an Android device or a computer. You can't do it on an iPhone. Then there are more things like that. Open is good in many ways, but there's a price. And another price is, of course, security and updates are lag behind a little bit on the Android side because there's nobody to control it. Again, Apple with its tight fist, at least the trains run on time, right? Anyway, I'm pretty impressed with this new iPhone 6S. I have the 6S Plus. I'll give you a more detailed review probably next week. I only got it yesterday. But so far, I think a surprisingly significant upgrade from last year's model. I have to say, in pink, it's not so bad. It's the new black. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Mark is next in Los Angeles. Hi, Mark. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I'm calling about my Nexus 5, which gets terrible battery life, but that's not what I'm calling about.
As does every other one. I mean, it's just, you know.
So what happened to my phone was all of a sudden, a couple of days ago, the phone wouldn't play any sounds, any sound from a video, any MP3s, the alarm. Voice recognition wouldn't work. Actually, while I was on hold with you, I figured out I just needed to restart the phone. And then that has fixed everything.
It's fixed everything. Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I thought it was maybe some kind of a conspiracy because we're coming out with the next one on Tuesday.
The next one comes out a couple of days from now, yeah.
You know, a good reason to buy a new phone, but no, that wasn't it.
The 5X, all rumor, but we think the 5X will be like the Nexus 5, a little bigger and by the same company, LG, and then there'll be a 6P, which will be from the Chinese company called Huawei, its first entree into the American market. But we don't know much more about these phones. Well, we know quite a bit, as usual, with a rumor mill. But until Google tells us on Tuesday, it's all rumor. It's not. It is a somewhat older phone, right? It's a couple of years old now.
Right. It's probably 2 years old, or almost 2 years old.
I hate to say that. I mean, you wouldn't throw out a computer after 2 years.
Right.
But, you know, phones, 2 years is about right.
Right. It's got another problem. I dropped it a couple of months ago, and I cracked the screen.
Oh, yeah, it's time.
Well, I took it to a repair shop.
Oh, okay.
They replaced the screen, and everything was fine until I went to use Google Maps and found out that the phone no longer receives a GPS signal.
Oh.
So I took it back to the repair shop, and they took it apart, looked at it. They said that they would have to order some part for it, and that was a couple months ago. I haven't heard back from them, so I don't think the guy's real interested in helping me anymore. Do you have any idea what that could be?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing I'd think is maybe the jar dislocated the antenna.
Right.
If it broke the antenna or it broke the connection to the antenna, then he'd have to get a part. Does sound like he may not be able to get the parts.
That may be a new antenna part, yeah.
Go to ifixit.com. This is a site where they publish fix-it, do-it-yourself fix-it manuals. A lot of these iPhone and Android phone repair companies actually use the manuals from iFixit and the parts, too. They sell the parts to do the repairs. You might check there and see. Generally, these are not something you want to do yourself. The screws are proprietary. They're unusual. It's like being a watchmaker. Some of this work is very fine. But iFixit would be a place at least you could figure out maybe what it is that's missing and even order it if you wanted.
Right.
I think it may also be time for a new, a new Nexus.
I agree. Well, I look forward to it.
You know what the number one thing, and I don't know if people really fully appreciate it, a fingerprint reader. It makes such a difference. Logging, you just feel like, first of all, this device, which is so easy to lose, is now much more secure because the fingerprint readers really do work. And it makes it so much easier to log in. If you're using Android Pay, it's a must because then it really safeguards your credit cards in much better way than the, you know, chip and sign or swipe and sign that we've got right now. And the new Nexuses will have a fingerprint reader on the back. So by itself, and the camera will be much better. The Nexus 5 camera was never great shakes. So I think it'll be worth it. What we don't know, unfortunately, is how much it's going to cost.
Right.
The Nexus 6 was a little pricey, although the prices have dropped considerably.
Exactly.
I would hope that Google would sell the Nexus 5 for that $400 price point. It's completely possible to make a flagship state-of-the-art phone these days, especially for an Android phone, that is around $400, I believe. We'll see what Google does Tuesday. But get a new one. You deserve it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's my number. Don't wear it out. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Some time ago, somebody called 867 whatever that is, 5309, in every area code of the United States. In some area codes, some states, you actually get Jenny or some recording. And in some states, there's somebody, I feel sorry for him, who actually has that number. I think most states, nobody has that number. I don't think you can really, there's nobody at that number, 867-5309. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Michael is next in Granada Hills. Hello, Michael. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I've got a Mac Pro, and I run Pro Tools on it, and I've got two Thunderbolt displays, and I want to add another monitor and put it in my live room so I can run the computer from there. But that HDMI port doesn't seem to work. When I talked to Mac, they had me rearrange the Thunderbolt displays into different buses, which I hadn't realized.
Yeah.
Before I did that, the computer wouldn't even boot. Now it boots, but it doesn't recognize that third monitor.
You have the trash can Mac Pro, not the cheese grater Mac Pro, right?
Yeah, okay. It's a 6-core with 64 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, those are nice. I have one as well, although it's not really getting used much these days. I ended up getting the 5K iMac.
I'm still a PC guy, but yeah.
It's all right. It's not a, you know, I think it's a little bit too pretty. And it's so.
I carry mine under my desk.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is you don't really need it pretty. And by being so pretty, they've, you know, make it more difficult to upgrade things like that. And there's no, you know, drives. There's limited drives internally and things like that. So you end up having all this stuff hung off of it. which makes it considerably less pretty, by the way. I used to run three monitors, a 4K monitor and two cinema displays off of it. I'm trying to think how I did that. I never used the HDMI. One was Thunderbolt. One was Mini Display Port, so it used the Thunderbolt port. And I'm trying to remember how the 4K monitor was connected. I think it was also Thunderbolt. So I know it could drive that. How high resolution are those monitors?
I had to lower them so I could see my interface better.
Yeah, well, that's...
So they're not running very high.
That's one problem with the 4K monitor, even more so with a 5K monitor. You don't want to run it at that size because everything's teensy-weensy.
Yeah, I'm not that young.
I'm not sure what the issue. Apple didn't have a fix?
Yeah, they didn't really seem to have any information.
Thanks. Built it and you don't know how to do it? Why would they have an HDMI plug if you can't use it in conjunction with the Thunderbolt? It may be that you can't. That may be the issue.
I asked that question, and nobody seemed to know that you couldn't. But yeah, for whatever reason, it's not recognizing any display when I connect it. So I don't know. I know that it's an old Dell monitor that I want to use because I don't really need anything.
Is it 30? It's not a 4K monitor, or is it?
Probably not.
Because HDMI won't do 4K. You understand that? Unless you have HDMI 2.0.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that Mac does. That's designed for a kind of... The HDMI is designed really for a 1080p monitor, for a lower res monitor.
Right. Which would probably be closer to what I have.
Yeah. I mean, that's the first thing, to make sure that monitor is compatible.
Yeah, that might be one of the problems.
Yeah, yeah. And make sure you're using a true HDMI cable. I don't know what the standard is on that Mac Pro, but you've got to... It's probably 1.4A. You've got to match that.
Okay.
Refresh rate might be relevant as well. I'm not sure. I'm surprised that Apple couldn't help you. Try a different cable. Make sure you have a 1.4A cable.
Yeah, I may not, but I will definitely do that. And I know I ended up buying a little converter, too, because I got the impression at one point that I needed to convert the signal.
You shouldn't. HDMI is HDMI, unless the...
Yeah.
It's an HDMI monitor, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the interface of the monitor. I don't know what you're... And how far is it? Do you want it to go?
Oh, I've got it running about 10 feet.
Oh, that's not bad. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to drive it too far, of course.
Right. Right. Is there any chance the Thunderbolt cables will end up getting longer, or are they already?
You know what? It's a sponsor, but Corning makes much longer Thunderbolt cables because they do something very interesting. Thunderbolt, when it was originally designed, was a fiber technology, and Intel and Apple, who were the chief designers, realized they weren't going to get it out the door in time, so they put it out as a copper connector, much like your regular cables, with copper wiring. But Corning, which makes fiber optics, has done a very clever thing. They have a standard Thunderbolt copper-style connector on one end. Inside the little dongle, it's not very big, it converts it to light. Then it goes fiber, and it can go a long way. I remember what the total run was, but it's quite distant, like 100 meters or something. It was a long way. And then it takes the light and reverses it back into analog and puts it into that, or not analog, but copper, and then puts it back into the Thunderbolts. Quite clever. They're a little more pricey, but they can go a long way. So look for Corning fiber Thunderbolt cables.
Yeah, that's easy.
Yeah. But you know what? You're a pro, and you're used to spending a little extra on good cabling. Aren't you?
I really enjoy doing that.
Yeah, what fun is it? LI7 in the chat room has given us a Apple support note, HT202801. I'm going to put that in the show notes at techguylabs.com, and that may be relevant.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I will look for it.
Okay. Boy, you know, we got Apple couldn't help you, but the chat room could.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised.
We got some geniuses in there. Hey, good luck. What kind of video editing do you do?
It's Pro Tools. You know, I'm just doing all audio.
Oh, audio. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you a recording engineer? Or?
Well, I'm just a guitar player, really, but I have to engineer now. Nice. I mean, it's not my favorite thing to do, but I'm not paying someone else to
Hey,
do it.
You don't have to spend $100,000 on a studio either.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing. I mean, that was really why people wanted a record label back in the day, because they needed to pay for studio time.
I know.
Now you've got in that Mac Pro, you can do as much as, you know, some of the higher end recording studios. It's amazing.
Yeah, I was reluctant to jump into Pro Tools like that, but it's getting better every day.
It's a big jump.
Okay, so, yeah, it was for me.
It's a big jump. Hey, good luck.
Thanks, Leo.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. And check it out. We'll put it in the show notes, as we do with everything we talk about on the show. I just put a link up there at techguylabs.com. I don't do that. I'm afraid that was a misstatement. The great, the wonderful James DeRuvo does that. He's sitting right now, as I speak, writing, Leo says he does it, but he doesn't. I'm James DeRuvo. Thank you, James, for doing such a great job. Then Josh Windisch in my office adds audio and video. The website, I think, is a great resource. We have a good search engine on there. It's techguylabs.com. Best of all, there's no fee. There's no charge. There's no sign-up. It's just like, you know, you walk in the door and everybody knows your name. But not really. That's the other website. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
We're the real geniuses, not those guys in the blue shirts.
I have the best job in the world. I have such a good job because I can actually have sponsors that feed me. It was always my dream. Blue Apron's actually kind of special because Blue Apron comes to you fresh and delicious, but not cooked. Why would you want that? Because there's not. I don't know if you've ever tried the prepared frozen foods. I've been on diets like that. Yeah, they're not so good. This is not what Blue Apron is. I want you to get it. Blue Apron is a magical thing. Gourmet recipes and all the ingredients you need precisely portioned, so there's never any waste. They're always fresh, nothing frozen. Now you cook it. But by cooking it, you get two things. First of all, the meal is so much better and you can modify it to suit taste. But you also learn how to cook it. And even though you're never going to get that meal again because they vary it all the time, you've now got a really great meal to add to your repertoire. I love Blue Apron. We look forward to that Blue Apron box for less than $10 a meal. Fresh ingredients, just the right amount. There's never any wastage. Step-by-step instructions. They've even got videos on the site. So you can, it's really a cooking, they don't want to say this, but it kind of is like cooking school. And you'll get such pleasure doing it. Because you really feel like a master chef. And it's easy. Let's see what's on the menu for the week of September 28th. Pan-seared steaks with cream spinach and lemon butter purple potatoes. That looks good. Spiced turkey and chickpea chili with something I never heard of. And that's the other thing I love about Blue Apron. You really learn new ingredients. What is it? Chermoula? Labneh? And pita croutons. I don't know. Crispy Cajun catfish, ooh, with dirty rice and spicy remoulade. Very Cajun. Very New Orleans. Fingerling potatoes and kale hash. Let me tell you something. You may think, I'm not going to eat kale. And, of course, if you didn't want that recipe, you don't have to get it. But this is going to teach you how to make it so good. With baked eggs and aged cheddar cheese, you're going to go, wow. Wow. Plus, they're not just sending you any kale. It's kale fresh from a local producer, so it's always really good. Spiced eggplant tomato bake. I love it, too. They take care of the stuff. It always, like, the tomatoes come in these little boxes, so they're perfect. I love Blue Apron. I know you will, too. That's why we've arranged two free meals for you at blueapron.com/twit. They have a family plan, too, by the way, which, with kid-friendly ingredients, is a great way to get the kids involved in cooking. It's just a better way to cook. You know what? There's nothing more healthy. There's nothing better for you than eating a home-cooked meal. And I don't just mean nutritionally. I mean spiritually. It's just a great feeling. Then you sit down to that meal and you made it. I always feel like it's kind of a way of showing your love for your family. It makes me really happy. You're going to love this. blueapron.com/twit for your first two meals free. We thank them for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the tech guy performing tech surgery. And it's okay. I washed my hands beforehand. John's in McAllen, Texas, our next caller. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. What's up?
Well, first, I got to say I'm a big fan of the Twit Network.
Thank you, sir.
ZDTV, Tech TV, all the way back.
Well, you know, we've just, you know, I just, it's we've got one kind of goal, which is to kind of give you as much as I possible information so you can be a better user of technology and then go out and change the world.
There you go.
That's cool. Our goal.
So here's my issue today. I use a lot of Google services. Android phone, got the Note 4. I use Hangouts for texting a lot.
Yeah.
I know you do too. You
I do too. Yep.
So my issue is when I'm in, right now I'm logged into my Gmail inbox. On the left-hand side, there's a place where I can start a texting conversation with somebody. If I don't have a recent conversation and I try to search for somebody, let's say I search for a buddy of mine. I don't know, maybe Father Robert Balazar, for example.
Yes,
right.
The lovely Father Robert, who's probably busy right now. Something in Philadelphia going on. I don't know.
Yeah, right. It shows me Father Robert Balazar's for everywhere. You know, I don't get just the guy I know. I get a whole bunch of Robert.
So it's more like a Google search of the World Wide Web than it is a search of your contacts.
Exactly.
Now, I have to say, I do not have that thing in my left-hand Gmail column anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm wondering if you turned on something in the Google Labs or something that gives you that.
Oh.
Look in your settings, okay? Remember, because I know what you're talking about. I've seen it. But it may be that you're using an out-of-date Labs. You know, the Labs are, as they say, some crazy experimental stuff, man. And I'm just...
Okay.
I would look and see if they have... I think they don't allow that anymore. I think that's gone. I'm surprised you still have it. Maybe it's a Chrome extension you added? Oh, there it is. Right side chat. No, that just says move the chat box to the right side of the box. Oh, I see what you're talking about. There's a never mind. On the left hand side there's a little Hangouts conversations.
Yes.
I see. I do have that.
The same thing in Google Contacts. If I go to Google Contacts, the search box says search for anyone, but I just want to search for people I know.
See, mine just gives me people I know. Oh, I know why you're getting. I know what you're getting. I bet. Do you ever use Google Plus?
Yeah.
So this is a mistake that Google has made. In fact, somebody was complaining about it. I saw on Twitter, and the guy in charge now, Bradley Horowitz, the guy who's in charge of Google Plus, said we know and we're going to fix this. Google Plus, contacts include circles. So if you've ever circled anybody, suddenly all of them are in your contacts, which you don't really want. I don't want it.
Right. Yeah, I just want the people I know.
Yeah. That is a flaw in contacts that Google, it's an odd thing they chose to do that, especially given the fact that Google Plus is kind of, you know, I think, is the word deprecated? I don't know what the word is. But I feel like it's the same thing to me. I see it's not really a search of the World Wide Web. It's just a broader search than you'd like it to be. It's your Google Plus and your contacts.
Right. Yeah. So is there a setting there somewhere that you can just make it?
No, and that's what they need to fix. And I think that's what Bradley was saying.
Okay.
I'll see if I can find his tweet. But I got the impression that we know it's a pain point. We're trying to fix it as fast as we can.
Okay, because if I go to my phone, I can start a new message, and it only searches people I know.
Yeah, I think it's something that they remember. They changed. Do you remember that they changed Google Contacts recently?
I think
that's when that happened. They inadvertently or misguidedly, one or the other, decided to include your circle contacts. Let me see what Brad Horowitz says. I'm gonna scroll back through his tweets and see if he what he says exactly. But my sense was that he knew it was a problem. He wants to fix it. So I don't know of a way to disable that. It bothers me, too. I don't want to see my circles because I've circled. In fact, yesterday I thought I considered deleting circles just because I don't want to see all those people. But you also get, don't you get in your Google Now cards, you get everybody's birthday. This is when
yes, I do.
Yeah, I don't want that either. This is when they really, really were trying to make Google Plus the next big thing. And they perhaps put a little too much wood in those arrows or something.
So. Well, I don't use Google Plus much anymore, so maybe I could just delete the circles.
Delete the circles. You won't see that anymore. You'll only see the stuff in your contacts list. The mistake they made is including circles in the contact list.
Okay. All righty. Well, I'll do that.
I think that's what you're seeing. That would be my guess.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm going to try and find Bradley's post and see. Maybe I'll tweet him and see if he can give us some insight into when they're going to fix that, because I think that's kind of a mistake. You remember, though, that a couple of years ago, Google was all in on this. They were scared of Facebook, and they said, we need a social network. And the insight that Google had, which isn't wrong, is that search alone is not going to do it, that eventually you would like to get better results based on your friends and the people and the, you know, what they know about you. And they were worried that Facebook was going to start doing search and a better search using social information. Well, since then, Facebook's demonstrated that this doesn't help at all. And it was a kind of a failed experiment. But Google at the time was so scared that Facebook was going to eat their lunch in search that they got everybody. In fact, they even said, this year, your bonus at Google will depend on how well you've implemented social in all of our stuff. That was a horrible, misguided decision. They've backed down on that. Larry Page, who was a champion of Google Plus, I think has kind of stepped back. I don't know how long Google Plus is for this world. Bradley's a great guy. And he's doing a good job. But the mistake was you got peanut butter in my chocolate. I don't want Google Plus stuff in my contacts. 8888-ASK-LEO, the phone number. See, coming up, the Gizwiz in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to try to get one more quick call in here before then. Josh in Highland, California. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Leo.
Hey.
I was listening earlier about you.
Android versus iPhone.
Yes, yes.
Which team are you on?
I'm for both.
Ah, I like it.
Phone-wise, I'm definitely more for Android. I was just going to say, you were saying before about, you know, like the turbo charging and the battery not lasting all day. I'd have to totally disagree because, I mean, before, I would say back in, you know, 2011, 2012, Android OS was not really built on capable hardware to run it.
That's true.
Nowadays, with phones coming out now.
But don't you wish you had better battery life? Am I wrong on that?
Well, I mean, everybody wishes that, but.
Well, on iPhone, you get it. That's the thing. And unfortunately, as they increase the size of batteries, we're running out of time, I'm sorry to say, they also increase the screen resolution, much higher than iPhone, and they kill the battery life again. They don't seem to be getting ahead. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's a little... Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I just ran out of time there. You still...
Oh, yeah, no, it's cool.
So what are you saying, though?
I'm saying that nowadays, I mean, you mentioned the Nexus 6. I just picked one up just because of the price and just because for the specs it has and for what it's running and how it runs.
That phone is huge. That should be a giant battery in there. That thing should go all day easy.
Yeah, right, right. But even when I had the phone before, I had the HTC M8. That phone would last me all day, and I would at least get about 3.5 hours of screen on time.
Ah, now that's nice.
And I would have about 25% to 30% at the end of the day. So, I mean, just comparing apples to apples, yeah, I mean,
I'm pretty sure you could squeeze another 30, 45 minutes, maybe even an hour out of the iPhone. But, I mean, it's Android with the way they're making the operating systems now, especially with the hardware that's capable to run them now. I think they're almost pretty much on the same level as Apple comparing to battery life, depending on which phone you pick up, of course.
Yeah.
And on top of that, Android OS is running a lot of background processes.
That's what kills the battery. No, that's the point I was making, is because Apple doesn't really allow background. They really control that tightly, so they don't have the wake lock issue. And I think that's the single, that's the problem right there in a nutshell. And I prefer to, I understand, I want multitasking. Apple doesn't allow it. So, but that's the trade-off, right? You have, on the Android side, you have a more free and open environment. You can do a lot more, but they're having a hard time getting good battery life. Whereas on the iPhone, where they're with, and they've done everything they can in the iPhone to squeak out as much battery life, including no background processes. So that's really the key, I think.
On for the 6S, I like definitely how they like the how they up the RAM up to 2 gigs now, because
makes a big difference.
When I was doing, yeah, it makes a huge difference, because
I agree.
When I was running maps, I was doing a summer job and my coworker had an Apple iPhone, and then every time he'd run maps, not the app, just the maps within the website,
yeah,
he would load it, and then it would just shut out, because I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's a RAM issue, because I mean, you're capped at 1 gig.
Oh, I completely agree. I completely agree. So, but that's another example. An Android phone with 2 gigs of RAM would be constrained. That would be tight. I think the Android phones now pretty typically have 3, and the Note 5 has 4. But Apple, again, because they really restrict what people can do on the phone, 2 gigs is a lot. Same with Windows Phone, by the way. Much lighter on RAM, but they seem to do just fine, because they just don't allow applications to eat RAM. They close them out. They don't.
Yeah.
Multitasking and background is really challenging on a resource constrained mobile environment, and that's the thing. I mean, if multitasking and background processing are important to you, you want a lot of RAM, then you've got to go Android, because you know the bad news on the Apple side is no choice. You do it Apple's way, or you don't do it at all. Hey, it's good to talk to you. I got to run, but I appreciate the call, and I agree with you.
Okay.
Have a good one. The only thing I might disagree is I don't know if I think battery life on the 6S Plus, as big as that is still better than any Android device I've had, except the OnePlus One, which had a 1080p screen. And Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take the short way home. Going to go straight down the road to Disneyland, where Dick DiBartolo is waiting for us with a LED hat and a big smile. Hello, Dickie D.
How are you?
I'm great. Mad Magazine's maddest writer. We call him the Gizwiz. He's always got a great gadget in hand.
Yeah, well, we're going to talk about a gadget that has lasted many years, but unfortunately, the company has not.
I miss the gadget warehouse.
Well, someday I'll talk about an old gadget.
Dick, we used to do this all the time on the podcast. He would come up with these gadgets that were really hot in their time.
Yes,
and have long forgotten since.
Years later. Yeah. Well, here's a gadget that lasted 5 years, but I don't know if you know it. But Quirky has gone bankrupt.
We talked a lot about Quirky. Quirky was a great idea, kind of
over
a quirky
the
idea.
Years.
Yeah.
And I actually today bought 3 more of these things, because this is one of my favorite gadgets. And if you don't know about it, I assume some company's going to buy the rights to all this stuff. But my favorite thing Pivot Power.
That might have been their biggest product. So the idea of Quirky was an inventor would come to them. They'd have the crowd, you know, the users test it, try it, recommend changes, refine it, and then they'd pick kind of the best products and sell them. And that was, I think, probably the most successful one ever, right?
I think so, because early on, they were in New York City. So I went down to see them, and I said, you know, my favorite thing is Pivot Power. And she said, well, the guy, his name is on the box. It's Jake Zen. She said, he's already made over $150,000.
Nice.
And it had just come out.
Nice.
So, like I said, I bought 3 of them. And it turns out that over the years, There are now lots of Pivot Powers. There's Pivot Power Junior, 4 outlets. Pivot Power for just about $12 on Amazon. That does not have the surge protector in it or the lighted on-off switch. But I found the original Pivot Power that we talked about years ago on Screensavers is now down to about $20.
Can you buy it on Amazon? I mean, they're still, so in other words, being made, even though Quirky is out of business, right?
Well, you know, Quirky only went out of business. I mean, the notice is up already on their website. I assume that warehouses had bought tons of these things, so I assume they'll still be available for a while. Yeah, I think originally Quirky sold the stuff, but then when the stuff really got popular, you know, you would order 100,000 of them for your warehouse. But I'm sad to see Pivot Power go.
I'm sad to see Quirky go.
Yes, exactly.
I thought they were kind of a nice idea, but I guess
You know, I'm wondering if like Kickstarter and stuff is sort of
it was like a crowdfunding for inventors.
Yeah,
sort of. But you're right; people probably just go straight to Kickstarter now.
Yeah. Although the great thing about Quirky is, I think you paid $10 to join. And then you could have people comment on your invention. If Quirky liked it, they would do the tooling for it, either manufacture it or get it manufactured. So it's an easy way for a person without any sales experience to get a product into the marketplace and make some money.
The Pivot Power. Get it while it's still around, while it's still in the warehouse.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dick DiBartolo does a great thing. It's called the GizWiz Podcast. You can find that at gizwiz.tv. Every week, he and Chad Johnson have great gadgets, have a lot of fun. It's funny, entertaining, and it's free at gizwiz.tv. Although, if you'd like to cut him a little check just to support him, I'm sure they'd take a buck or two thrown their way.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. Actually, the guy who founded Patreon is right in the other room right now, Jack Conte of Pamplemousse.
Oh, my God!
Yeah, and I know Patreon is how you crowdfund your
podcast. Yes, it is.
Jack's done a wonderful thing. You know, he's a a very popular YouTube band, and he thought, you know, as a creator, as an artist, as a musician, I wish it were easier for me to have my fans support my music, and so created Patreon, and what a success that's been.
That's a great Well, thank you. Thank him.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Dick. Go to gizwiz.biz for your chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you got to do is say, what the heck is it? And in fact, it doesn't have to be the right answer. In fact, you're bad, better chance of winning if it's the wrong answer. Gizwiz.biz. I like your Captain America shield behind you.
Oh, yeah.
Will that stop bullets or brick bats?
I don't think so.
Neither.
Maybe a brick bat. Spitballs.
Spitballs. Thank you, Dickie D. What are you doing over there? You're making the hand signals. I got time for one more call. I'm going to let you choose, Sandy or Michael.
Oh, don't put me on the spot or anything.
They're both wonderful, I'm sure. Let's start with Sandy because she's been waiting the longest. Okay. Hi, Sandy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. We got a new laptop, but at what point do we ditch our old laptop?
I would keep it as long as you have somewhere to keep it, because there's stuff on the hard drive, I bet, right, that you didn't necessarily get transferred over.
Well, this one is my daughter's. She's only 12, and so it doesn't have a lot of stuff on it. I don't even know if it's worth keeping. I don't know enough about.
Oh, I see. You're wondering if it's useful.
Yes.
Yeah. How old is it?
I don't even know. It's a Dell Inspiron 1525.
Okay.
And it feels really slow to me, but you know, if I put some.
That's because your 12-year-old daughter's been using it. It's got all gummed up, right?
I can imagine that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty old. I'm looking at it. It's a Pentium dual core. That means with 2 gigs of RAM. Yeah, it's pretty slow. However, there are charities that would love it. The reason is what they do with these old devices is they fix them up and they put Linux on it. They take Windows off and they put something that's a little lighter weight on there. And schools and people who don't have the, low-income people who can't afford their own computers often get them. So there are a number of these charities around There's maybe one local to you. You might call your local church or whatever. But there's also, there's also, I think it was called the, Dick, do you remember, was it the Christina Foundation? I think it was called the Christina Foundation. That they would, C-R-I-S-T-I-N-A. That's a national organization that directs donations of used and surplus computers to people in need. They've been around 30 years. So if there's not somebody local that you want to contact, that 8-year-old laptop might be of value at the Christina Foundation. C-R-I-S-T-I-N-A.org.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, you don't want to just throw it out. You don't want to put it in the landfill. In fact, it wouldn't be responsible to do that. There's stuff in there that really needs to be recycled properly, like the batteries, the screen. There's all sorts of metals in there you don't want to put in a landfill. But it may have some value. Even as old as it is, it might have some value. So I would at least contact Christina.org, and or if there's a church or an organization in your area, contact them. Hey, thanks so much for being here. I'm glad we could do this together. Well, let's do it again, shall we? Thanks to Nathan Staten, my musical director, who spins the hits and always keeps us smiling. I love it. You do a great job, Nathan. And, of course, Heather Hammond, she's the phone ranger, answers the calls, preens you, prepares you, guides you, makes you ready for your appearance on national radio. Wish somebody would do that for me someday. Thank you for joining me. I'm glad to see you. Have a great Geek Week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.